You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the May 2021 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair Part A. The Fall of the House of Hammer. Armie Hammer's life seemed beautiful from the outside, perfect wife and kids, sparkling Hollywood career, but a glimpse into his family's dark past reveals how the shocking allegations of rape and abuse may be the latest chapter in a fraught legacy. By Julie Miller. Armie Hammer already needed crisis therapy. The world was under lockdown last summer, and Hammer had been quarantining at a luxury villa in the Cayman Islands with his father, Michael, his stepmother, Misty, his two young children, and his wife of a decade, Elizabeth. It was a very complicated, intense situation, with big personalities all locked into a little, tiny place, Hammer told British GQ. I think, to be quite frank, I came very close to completely losing my mind. He compared himself to a trapped wolf who wants to chew his own foot off. Hammer had been so desperate to escape the Caymans that he booked a flight back to the U.S. A source close to Elizabeth claims that his decision to flee his family during a pandemic was the ultimate affront in a marriage that had already been tested by infidelity. She filed for a divorce in July. By January 1st, Hammer seemed to have rebounded romantically with a series of short-term girlfriends and was ready to face the world anew. 2021 is going to kneel down before me and kiss my feet, because this year I'm the boss, Hammer tweeted. Now I know what we are up against, and it's time to go to war. Several weeks later, however, Hammer found himself in a darker crisis. Amid the turmoil of divorce proceedings, several women took to social media to accuse the actor of emotional abuse, manipulation, and violence. The scandal ballooned as screen grabs circulated that seemed to show the actor describing sexual fantasies involving rape and cannibalism. Hammer stepped away from two high-profile projects, a rom-com with Jennifer Lopez and a Paramount series about the making of The Godfather. Shortly after, his agency, WME, dropped him. Then, in mid-March, a woman came forward with detailed allegations of rape and an attack so violent that she thought he was going to kill me. In a press conference with her lawyer, Gloria Allred, Effie, who declined to give her full name, recounted a 2017 assault that lasted for several hours, in which Hammer slammed her head against a wall, bruised her face, and whipped her feet with a crop. Hammer's lawyer, Andrew Brettler, has maintained that all interactions between Mr. Hammer and his former partners were consensual. Releasing correspondence between Effie and Hammer over the course of a four-year relationship. But, as Allred emphasized to Vanity Fair in an earlier interview for this story, while adults may consent to some BDSM practices, they still have a right to withhold consent to other practices. For the people who know Hammer's family, peppered with Russian communist and American oil tycoons, the allegations are an unsurprising development in a long and sordid history with drugs, sex, dysfunction, and betrayal. Many men in the Hammer family have a dark side, sources close to the family say, one that looms across five consecutive generations. Sins of the Fathers. The family's first brush with scandal was in 1919, when Armie's great-great-grandfather, Dr. Julius Hammer, gave the wife of a Russian diplomat an abortion. Julius was a Russian immigrant living in the Bronx and a central member of the Communist Party of the United States, according to biographer Edward J. Epstein, who published Dossier, The Secret History of Armand Hammer in 1996. The woman, Marie Oganesoff, died days later. Julius was convicted of first-degree manslaughter and sentenced to 3.5 to 12 years in Sing Sing. With Julius in prison, his 22-year-old son, Armand Hammer, Army's namesake, abandoned a medical career to take over his father's other business, Allied Drug. According to Epstein, Vladimir Lenin sent a message to Joseph Stalin, encouraging particular support for Armand, telling him, "This is a small path to the American business world, and this path should be made use of in every way." Armand moved to the Soviet Union in 1921 for about a decade to fortify family connections. While there, he married a Russian singer named Olga, and together they had a son named Julian, Army's grandfather. By the 1950s, Armand had divorced Olga as well as a second wife, Angela, who had told the court that due to his time in Russia and his medical training, it causes him no pain to see the sufferings of others. He moved to Los Angeles, married a wealthy woman named Frances Barrett Tolman in 1956, invested her money in the then-failing Occidental Petroleum, and drove the company to incredible success. Armand tried to distance himself from his Soviet connections, reimagining himself as a self-made industrialist. He even hired a journalist to ghostwrite a memoir, The Remarkable Life of Dr. Armand Hammer. He had a private Boeing 727, palled around with Prince Charles and high-powered politicians. He was a close friend of Senator Al Gore Sr. and attended the inaugurations of Franklin D. Roosevelt, Ronald Reagan, and George H.W. Bush, among other presidents, collected expensive artwork, and convinced Chinese leaders to lend two pandas to Los Angeles for the city's 1984 Olympics. He died in 1990. But in 1996, Epstein's bombshell biography exposed the late Occidental Petroleum chairman for wide-ranging grifts, including laundering money, using artwork to fund Soviet espionage, bribing his way into the oil business, and knocking off Fabergé eggs. According to Epstein, Armand bugged his office and home, plus his cufflinks. To record decades worth of conversations, he had a fixer and was known to do business with a briefcase full of cash. He also made an illegal contribution to the Nixon re-election campaign, which, in all likelihood, according to the New York Times, went to help to pay for the Watergate cover-up. Though he faced a felony charge for obstructing justice, a Washington lawyer helped him plead guilty to misdemeanor charges, and Bush later pardoned him. In the photos, succession, Michael Hammer, Casey Hammer, Drew Hammer, Victor Hammer, Armand Hammer, Army Hammer, and Julian Hammer posed together in 1989. Armand Hammer and Prince Charles at a 1990 polo match in Windsor Great Park. Armand had multiple mistresses, including Martha Kaufman, a mother of two who divorced her husband after meeting Armand and whom he put on Occidental's payroll as an art consultant. When Armand's wife, Frances, grew suspicious, Armand had Martha legally change her name to Hillary Gibson, insisting, according to Epstein, that his mistress wear wigs, glasses, and makeup to change her appearance. The affair lasted more than a decade, with Armand promising to take care of her and her children after he died, she later told Epstein. She drove a car with a homing device, used a tapped phone, and submitted to his sexual demands even when they were extremely humiliating. When Armand died, she learned that he had left her out of his will. Everything he did was public, said Casey Hammer, Armin's granddaughter and Army's aunt, who is estranged from most of her family and works as a kitchen designer at a San Diego Home Depot. God forbid you did anything wrong in front of his friends. You couldn't wear the same dress twice to his gala parties. On the outside, we had to be the perfect family. But behind the scenes, Armand required his son, Julian, daughter-in-law, Glenna Sue, and three grandchildren to make appointments to see him, Casey claimed. I started watching Succession, and I had to turn it off, said Casey, because it was like, oh my God, that's my family. Julian was extremely bright, but Armand didn't seem to care much for his only child, and passed him over entirely when he left Julian's son, Michael, Army's father, his business empire. Casey believes her father, Julian, caused too much trouble and was an affront to Armand's obsession with appearances. As she said, he could never get my grandfather's attention unless he resorted to really, really bad behavior. In the morning hours after Julian's 26th birthday in 1955, he killed a man inside his Los Angeles home over a gambling debt and supposed advances on his wife, Glenna Sue. The front page headlines read, Millionaire Son Kills GI. Armand had a friend deliver $50,000 in cash to a lawyer in Los Angeles. Julian claimed self-defense, and charges were dismissed. In her self-published 2015 book, Surviving My Birthright, Casey alleges that Julian sexually abused her when she was a child, and that Julian was abusive to others in the family, allegations she also made to Epstein. In an email, Jan Ward, Casey and Michael's half-sister, declined to comment on the allegations, instead offering this statement. I will say that I love my family very much, which includes my brother, my sister, and my nephews. I do have wonderful memories of us kids spending every summer at Laguna Beach with our Grandma Olga and spending the holidays with our parents and grandparents. We were all blessed to be able to attend excellent schools, thanks to Grandpa Hammer, who was a great supporter of education. Our family taught us the value of hard work, and I have had a fulfilling career and a wonderful family life. Like his father, Michael struggled with excess. In 1985, Michael, then working at Occidental, met Drew Mobley on a plane. The lore, as Army told New York Magazine's Vulture, my dad was supposed to be on a flight, went to the airport, and got hammered and passed out. He missed his flight, woke up, and was like, oh God, I have a meeting. He rebooked, switched seats due to claustrophobia, and wound up next to Drew. They married that year and had Army the next. The devout Christian Drew seemed to have a tempering effect on Michael's own vice struggles, which he has said included drinking and drugs. When I accepted Christ, Michael has said, the bad experiences didn't just stop, but they started dwindling. Daddy issues. If Armand wanted to keep the empire he built in the family, he didn't have many options. His son, Julian, was addled and unreliable, and his grandson, Michael, by multiple accounts, was not as bright and more interested in a playboy lifestyle than world domination. When Army was four, his great-grandfather Armand, estimated by Forbes to be worth around $180 million, died. The battle for the estate began almost immediately and still simmers 30 years later. Within hours of Armand's death, police officers who were summoned to the house observed Michael attempting to remove belongings and load them into five waiting cars. The house, which had been owned by the late Francis, was to be turned over to Francis's niece upon Armand's death. Casey and Hillary Gibson claimed that Armand had made promises to his family that his estate would take care of them. But at the will reading in a Los Angeles law office, his heirs learned he'd only left behind a piddly $40 million. Casey and her father would each receive just $250,000. In addition to cutting Julian out, Armand name-checked Jan, Glenna Sue's daughter from another relationship, and thereby his step-granddaughter, as having no claim to his estate. "All of a sudden, I'm in a bad Stephen King novel," Casey said. "My father is worried about why Michael got the Rolls-Royce, and I'm like, Dad, you don't understand. You're going to be out on the street. No one's paying for your house. No one's paying for anything." The next day, Casey said that she sat with Julian so he doesn't blow his brains out, because now he's threatening to kill me, he's threatening to kill Michael, he's threatening to kill everybody. Next photo, driven to excess. Michael and Misty Hammer photographed for a feature in the Montecito Journal. In total, 100 claims and lawsuits were filed against Armand's estate by Casey, by former mistresses, by charities, alleging that the late tycoon owed them, according to the Washington Post. Casey says that she settled for about $1.4 million. Epstein reported that Gibson settled for $4.2 million. The inheritance battle tore the family apart. Michael's own mother, Glenna Sue, told the Washington Post that her son forgot about us, instead favoring Drew's family. Rumors still linger that Armand had stockpiled large sums in cash lockboxes and secret overseas bank accounts, and those were inflamed when Scott Dietrich, Michael's college friend, whom Michael appointed vice president of the Armand Hammer Foundation, was arrested after a flight back from London with $60,000 in undeclared cash. According to Twin Cities news stories at the time, Dietrich's passport recorded nearly 12 trips abroad, lasting less than 36 hours, reported the Washington Post. Michael posted the $250,000 bail, and Dietrich was later acquitted of cash smuggling charges. Armand had yearned for a legacy, spending more than $100 million to build the Hammer Museum. But in 1994, according to the Washington Post, Michael turned it over to the UCLA Art Department. He also asked the Metropolitan Museum of Art to remove Armand's name from the Hall of Arms and Armor rather than pay the remaining $1 million on his grandfather's pledge. Even though Armand had spent his final years recommitting himself to the Jewish faith, he didn't live to celebrate a belated bar mitzvah for himself in his 92nd year. Michael began redirecting the Hammer Foundation's funds to Christian groups like Jews for Jesus and Italy for Christ. As of 2021, Armand's name no longer graces the Metropolitan Museum of Art, but it fronts the Student Center at Oral Roberts University, a Christian school where Drew is a board trustee. In the last two decades, ProPublica's tax record database shows the foundation has donated over $3 million to the university and more than $4 million more to the Pentecostal Dream Centers, among a smattering of other causes, religious and not. Julian died in 1996. The year after, Michael moved Drew, Army, and his younger son Victor to a seaside condo on Grand Cayman, briefly relinquishing his U.S. citizenship in the 90s. The move, according to Army, was predicated on Michael's having been a big fan of The Firm, the movie in which Tom Cruise travels to the Caribbean tax haven. 10 years later, the family returned to California, but the transition from the Caribbean was rocky. In 2005, the 21-room manor in Pasadena that the family was renovating burned down, resulting in $15 million worth of damages. In 2011, Michael spent the night in a Santa Barbara jail for a DUI charge that was subsequently dropped. Later that year, significantly bigger trouble blew the Hammer's way when the Knoedler Gallery, part of Michael's inheritance from Armand and one of the oldest New York galleries, shuttered suddenly. The next day, the gallery and its former director, Ann Friedman, were sued by hedge fund executive Pierre Lagrange for selling him a forged Jackson Pollock painting for $17 million. In the years and lawsuits that followed, Knoedler was accused of selling about $70 million in fake paintings, all done by a little-known artist in Queens, in a con that allegedly stretched back to 1994. In total, Knoedler was accused of selling 63 forged pieces. All of the 10 lawsuits filed against Knoedler were settled, one midway through a high-profile trial in 2016, with Domenico De Sol, chairman of Tom Ford International and Sotheby's, and his wife Eleanor, seeking $25 million in damages. During the trial, a Knoedler accountant testified that Michael Hammer had essentially treated the 8 to 31 Holdings Group, which owned the gallery, as his personal piggy bank, using a company credit card to buy, among other things, two luxury cars and a trip to Paris for a little over $1 million. When Michael sold one of the cars, a Rolls-Royce, in 2008, he kept the $452,000 it brought, listing it on his W-2 as salary. About an hour before Michael was scheduled to testify, both parties reached a settlement. Though some in the art world predicted that Knoedler's downfall would damage Michael's, and tangentially even Army's, reputation, it didn't seem to. "We call these guys the Lucky Sperm Club here," said a person with ties to the family. "Never accomplished anything. They know a whole lot about spending other people's money." If there is another skill Michael appears to have, it is hiring good lawyers. Various sources who wanted to speak about the specifics of Michael's business and personal tactics, many of them women, say they are frightened to speak on record or have signed paperwork prohibiting them from doing so. Michael's current lawyer, Tom Clear, is representing Dominion Voting Systems in its defamation lawsuits against Rudy Giuliani and Mike Lindell, seeking more than $1.3 billion in damages from each man for claiming the company's voting machines were used to steal the 2020 election. In spite of the scandals, Michael remains a regular fixture in Montecito society pages, at car shows, and around charity events benefiting the Santa Barbara police. In 2015, the same year the Armand Hammer Foundation made a $1.1 million donation to the Peterson Automotive Museum, the organization added Michael to its board of directors. The endowment he is most proud of, multiple people say, is his own. For years, three people claimed Michael boasted about a sex throne, or naughty chair, as he has called it, that he kept in Armand Hammer Foundation headquarters in Carpinteria, a warehouse where two people claim Michael lived for several years after his divorce. The structure, about 7 feet high, features a chair with a hole in the seat, a cage underneath, and a hook. The Hammer coat of arms, the same one that for years adorned the exterior of the headquarters, is painted on the seat. In one photo, Michael sits atop the throne, grinning, while holding the head of a blonde woman, sitting in the cage and also smiling. In response to Vanity Fair's questions about Michael's sex throne, drug and alcohol use, finances, and history with women, Claire, counsel for Michael Hammer and the Armand Hammer Foundation, said these questions, which ask about unsolicited gag gifts sent by friends, conduct that sounds pretty typical of recently divorced people, and entirely legal financial transactions that were properly accounted for, are absurd. One former friend who knew of the sex throne said that when he heard about Army's alleged kinks, I was not the least bit surprised. In 2017, several years after he and Drew divorced, Michael proposed to Misty Millward, a Four Seasons The Biltmore Spa healer, in Michael's words, who helped him recover from back surgery, with a 7.5-carat diamond on the 4th of July. Speaking to the Montecito Journal, Michael said that his proposal had a patriotic theme, a red alligator skin Birkin bag, Armand's white rolls, in which he popped the question, and the blue of his very own eyes. Next, photos, party animals. Army, with then-girlfriend Paige Lorenz and his mother, Drew. Elizabeth Chambers and Army attend the 2018 Vanity Fair Oscar party. The facade of the Hammer Museum in Los Angeles. Victor, Angelia De Maistre, Christine Reed, Michael, Army, and Chambers attend the 2012 Hammer Gala at the Hammer Museum. Call him by his name. Army has the same blue eyes and the family name tattooed on his wrist. When Army Hammer broke through in Hollywood with 2010's The Social Network, the sordid lore of his family backstory was a footnote, whether forgotten or purposely ignored. To the world, Army was simply a cartoon prince, handsome scion. It's easy to discount a beautiful person, especially a beautiful person with a famous last name, as one-dimensional. But Army spent many interviews over his decade-long career telegraphing his own texture. In 2018, Army told Conan O'Brien about his own arrest in 2011, the same year that Michael was pulled over for the DUI in Santa Barbara. Army and a friend had been transporting supplies for Elizabeth's bakery, Bird, through Texas when their truck was stopped at a checkpoint and a dog sniffed marijuana. Army spent the night in jail. The inmates were great, Army said, after cameras cut to a mugshot showing him tanned with a popped collar. The guards were real assholes. And yes, he was raised in the effing paradise of the Cayman Islands and used to have a painting of Gorbachev that was given to my family by Gorbachev. But he was also raised with good values, thanks to Drew, he has said. My mother's parents grew up in the Depression in Oklahoma, so it was very different, Army told GQ. She didn't allow us to be raised like we were wealthy. We were never just told, hey, here's some cash. If our friends were getting a $10 allowance, she would make a point of giving us $7. He has claimed financial independence from his family throughout his career. I'm really proud of that. So much so that in 2017, he confessed he couldn't pay on a bet he had lost to filmmaker Luca Guadagnino. It would literally bankrupt me, and I need to buy diapers tomorrow. Army's upbringing, through his own eyes, was picaresque. As a child in the Cayman Islands, he told Details in 2011, he was a machete-wielding, tree-climbing Tom Sawyer. As an adolescent in Los Angeles, after a family move, he was an outcast truant who identified with Macaulay Culkin's Home Alone character, set school property ablaze, and dropped out of high school. His image-conscious and outwardly religious parents, Army said, disapproved of his decision to act. My entire life has been this long, pressured conversation about the family I represented, Army has said, recalling Armand's own ethos. When you walk out the door, you represent us. Eventually, Army found success doing it. When Army booked a starring role as a young Billy Graham in the 2008 biopic Billy, The Early Years, Drew hosted a screening for about 300 friends at the Hammer Museum's Billy Wilder Theater, confirmed two people with knowledge of the event. The year after Army appeared as the Winklevoss twins in The Social Network, he co-starred with Leonardo DiCaprio and Clint Eastwood's J. Edgar. A run at marquee stardom followed. the rom-com Mirror, Mirror with Julia Roberts, the action epic The Lone Ranger with Johnny Depp, and the 2015 caper film The Man from U.N.C.L.E. alongside Henry Cavill. But fizzled. Army developed a sense of humor about his lack of success as a leading man. Ask about the low box office return of one film he deadpanned that might be the Army Hammer effect. As if the box office bust weren't ego-damaging enough, BuzzFeed piled on with a damning feature by Anne Helen Peterson titled 10 Long Years of Trying to Make Army Hammer Happen. The subheading said it all, and still does. How many second chances does a handsome white male star get? Guadagnino saw grit beneath Army's surface, though, and cast him in 2017's Oscar-winning indie Call Me By Your Name. It's not just that he's beautiful-looking, said the filmmaker. It's that, plus, his inner turmoil that is fascinating to me. The performance earned Army a Golden Globe nomination, the most acclaim of his career. But he bristled in one press interview, telling Andy Cohen that his religious mother, Drew, refused to see the film because the drama centers on a same-sex romance. It goes against a lot of her very strong religious beliefs, he said. Occasional familial venting aside, Army looked the part of the perfect movie star. He's like this classical leading man, somebody who's a little out of time, like seeing Gary Cooper walk into a supermarket or something, said Army's Lone Ranger director, Gore Verbinski. And in Elizabeth, a tough woman like Drew, but with an entrepreneurial spirit in lieu of an evangelical one, Army seemingly found his match. I mean, they are the Ken and Barbie of the world, gushed Kathy Lee Gifford, a friend of the family, recalling the couple's 2010 wedding. Some people I spoke to described Army as a sweet, goofy, unfiltered guy who loves his children, a what-you-see-is-what-you-get kind of person. Timothy Chalamet once described him as the example of when people present themselves as they truly are, and Army is as he truly is. In hindsight, Army was perhaps more unfiltered than he or anyone realized. To Elle, one chick tried to stab me when we were having sex. She was like, true love leaves scars. You don't have any. And then she tried to stab me with a butcher knife. He continued to date her for 7 months. Also to Elle, he recalled a violent altercation with a homeless man. My wife says I have a frontal lobe issue. Your frontal lobe controls your danger response, like, whoa, I shouldn't be doing this. To details, he recounted the story of a multi-day beer-soaked bachelor party that concluded with an epic bonfire, a giant tequila bottle full of gasoline, and a machine gun. To Playboy, he discussed the effect Elizabeth had on his bedroom habits. I used to like to be a dominant lover. I liked the grabbing of the neck and the hair and all that. Then you get married and your sexual appetites change. You can't really pull your wife's hair. It gets to a point where you say, I respect you too much to do these things that I want to do. After Playboy, Army expressed regret, explaining that he had learned the hard way not to drink during interviews. But for a 2019 British GQ profile, Army and the writer drank so many martinis that the writer blacked out. His reported social media liking habits suggested that he was fond of bondage, and he has spoken profusely about his love of knots to Playboy, a man's version of knitting. Stephen Colbert, whom he challenged to a knot-tying contest on The Late Show, and in style, I've never admitted this before. Sometimes I carry a rope to practice knots. A source close to Elizabeth said that when he was not working, Army would throw himself into hobbies with great intensity. Several years back, Army introduced Elizabeth to shibari, a Japanese bondage art form in which people are tied up in intricate patterns. Elizabeth tried to be supportive of the new interest, which Army allegedly indulged by buying mannequins and inventing elaborate knots. Elizabeth even tried to find a lucrative spin on the obsession. She suggested he write a book about a hobby called Why Not, laughed the friend. Army and Elizabeth had two children, a daughter in 2014 and a son in 2017, the latter of whom was given the middle name Armand as an homage to the Hammer lineage. According to a friend close to Elizabeth, Army confessed to being unfaithful shortly after his son's birth, but claimed it was a one-time offense. Years later, this friend says, Elizabeth found evidence of an affair Army was having with a co-star. The Hammers had been in expensive family therapy, but to Elizabeth, the indiscretions, and more notably, his decision to flee the family during a pandemic, were the final straw. When Army touched down in the U.S., he mistakenly sent a raunchy text message meant for someone else to his estranged spouse. Elizabeth filed for divorce shortly after. The weirdest effing thing I've ever heard. By his own admissions over the years, Army has enjoyed partying, and finally, free from the restrictions of a decade-long marriage, he indulged. Friends close to the family remark that Army's separation behavior recalls Michael's. Michael's post-split tear is said to have involved a string of women, illicit substances, and tattoos. It's a popular misconception that the Hammers created the Arm and Hammer baking soda brand. Armand settled for investing in it after his bid to buy the company was rejected. But Michael fuels it with a tattoo of the popular logo on his arm. The slogan for Arm and Hammer is the standard of purity, while Michael allegedly embodied the opposite. Michael, whom multiple people say has the mindset of a teenage boy, also allegedly documented some of his deeds, texting X-rated photos to friends. Two people claim that Army did the same, suddenly getting more than five tattoos in a matter of months, including an outline of the Caymans above his knee, a heart that was inked by the in-house tattoo artist at Kaya Gerber's birthday party to match two teenage boys, the letters EGBA, standing for Everything's Gonna Be All Right, and the word chaos, because he wants his life to be chaos. Said one friend, I'm pretty sure he's accomplishing that. Army also depicted a new dark side on his secret Instagram feed at eldestructo86. One photo of him taking a drug test was captioned, All negative, bitches. My body is a finely tuned toxicant processing unit. To be fair, I had THC and benzos in my piss, but who doesn't? Another photo showed a mannequin tied up with a caption, If quarantine doesn't start moving more quickly, I'm going to F this thing. Two women who knew Army romantically in the last year say they were intoxicated by his charm and that he was able to cycle through Romeo and Juliet-style romantic proclamations, teary family confessionals, and kinky bedroom scenarios with disorienting ease. According to Courtney Vucikovic, Army was on a flight out of the Cayman Islands, escaping the intense lockdown situation last June when he messaged her on Instagram for the first time. The DMs came fast and furiously. The actor immediately spilled about the tense situation with what he described as his crazy family, describing near fistfights with his father and a short-lived escape plan that involved taking a fishing boat to Cuba. Within the first 5 minutes, he was basically like, This all goes back to my horrible childhood, said Vucikovic, the owner of an on-demand glam app called Flashed. It's not the most romantic thing, but we bonded over past trauma. Army earned her sympathy, according to Vucikovic, through full court press. Day one, he makes you feel bad for him. It's when he makes himself look like a victim. Then he love bombs you like crazy. You've never felt more special in your entire life. I've never seen anything like it. We're in a restaurant, and I'm sitting across from him, and he pulls my chair over right next to him in front of everybody and is hugging and kissing you. You're the only girl in the whole world. And then he starts the manipulation and the darker stuff. One of the most shocking things that I realized he did to other women is he says that he never tied up a human being before, only mannequins, she continued. I remember thinking, like, that's got to be true because that's the weirdest effing thing I've ever heard. Who would lie about that? That's weirder than saying I tied up 25 people. Vucicovic explained that one encounter, which took place during an evening in Sedona, Arizona, left her with regret. Army, she said, was drinking heavily and persuaded her to participate in a bondage scenario that I was not comfortable with. He sulked, cold and angry, to convince her, and then, she said, I eventually consented and really regretted doing so. As messy as it was, Vucicovic said she felt like it was a real relationship. Army had introduced her to his mother, Drew, and talked about bringing her to the Dominican Republic while he filmed a romantic comedy with Jennifer Lopez. But just as fast as the relationship formed in June and intensified, the two were spending nearly every day together, she alleged, it ended in September. She checked herself into a treatment program for trauma. In September, the then 22-year-old Paige Lorenz met Army. She, too, got an immediate barrage of sordid family secrets. A lot of really dark stuff, Lorenz said. I felt confused why he was telling me this stuff so instantly. It was stuff I would never share off the bat. He said his grandfather was this kind of very scary person who had these crazy sex parties where there would be guns. But, said Lorenz, there was an unmistakable tone of awe. He thought it was cool and was proud of him in a way. Army took Lorenz to Texas to meet his mother, like he had with Vucicovic. She enjoyed the trip because it felt like a normal relationship thing to do, but suspected Army's relationship with Drew was complicated. His mother spoke of the devil trying to take Army, and she worried that he didn't believe in God. Lorenz said that Drew let the two sleep in a bedroom together, jokingly pulling out a ruler and telling them to stay 6 feet apart, but immediately started grilling her about her religious beliefs. She was very, very sweet to me. She instantly started talking to me. Well, have I accepted the Holy Spirit? I've never been to such a Christian household. After a few days, Lorenz said that Drew opened up to her about how she was so worried about Army and so grateful for me because she felt like I was a good influence on him and that she just wanted him to accept God back into his life and that he had just been fighting everything for a long time. During their time together, Lorenz said, Army didn't have any money. She said that she paid for everything, since Army was only getting by on loans from friends. Lorenz broke things off with Army after he started making rules for me of things I could and couldn't do, who I could have over, who I couldn't. He told me that I couldn't have anyone else in my bed, and then I just started to feel really unsafe and really sick to my stomach about things, she said. I was also emotionally dependent on him. Lorenz ended the relationship over text because you never know what you're going to get with him. He's kind of a scary person. Lorenz has since moved back to the East Coast and wants nothing to do with the entertainment business. She said she didn't plan to speak or think about Army Hammer again. Then she saw messages posted on the anonymous @HouseofEffie Instagram account, purported to be from Army and detailing extreme BDSM scenarios. The date stamps ranged from 2016 to 2020, overlapping with Army's marriage to Elizabeth, who, through a representative, declined to be interviewed for this story. I saw these screenshots, and my stomach just dropped like, holy F, said Lorenz, because he would say things to me, weird stuff, like, I want to eat your ribs. The scariest part of it is that I did love him in a way. I would have let him kind of do anything. He had a certain hold over me. Lorenz said that she spoke up for several reasons: to support the other women coming forward, to hold Army accountable for what she claims he did to her, and to open up conversations about consent. Consent is really complicated, even if it's consenting to something in vanilla sex that you don't really want to do and say yes to, it can be really traumatizing. Lorenz said that she hopes to start an organization that can advocate for safe sex and women learning how to say no. After a version of this story was published online in March, Effie, the 24-year-old woman presumed to be behind the Instagram account, came forward accusing Army of raping and beating her. "He also committed other acts of violence against me, to which I did not consent," she told reporters while crying. "During those 4 hours, I tried to get away, but he wouldn't let me." Allred said her client had turned evidence over to authorities, adding, "It is for law enforcement and for the prosecutor to decide if there is sufficient evidence to pursue it. I will only say that Effie has the courage to cooperate with any investigation that may be taking place." Afterward, Los Angeles police confirmed that they have been investigating Army since February 3rd. The allegations raise a raft of complicated questions about consent, BDSM boundaries, and the intersection of abuse claims and social media. Speaking to Vanity Fair weeks before the press conference, Allred acknowledged that consent is especially complex in the BDSM community, where control and power are kinks. "The public has not been educated on how to view those who engage in BDSM practices. In addition, those who have heard of the BDSM community may have a negative opinion of those who engage in such practices," said Allred. "Part of the problem is that the victim is extremely vulnerable and trusting," she said, "and is often taken advantage of by sexual predators who know that many of their victims will be afraid to report the crimes against them for fear of being blamed and shamed and not believed when they say that they did not consent to crimes against them." No criminal charges or lawsuits have been filed against the actor at the time of print publication, although the LAPD's investigation was ongoing. Those in Army's camp mainly blame the scandal on the unverified gossip account of At Dermois, which amplified the claims to more than 750,000 users in January. "You used to have to verify facts before making allegations like this," said one friend, speaking on the condition of anonymity. "He's being attacked from all different angles on unverified claims. It's hard for people around him to watch this." Army has never confirmed the text on his own, but the impulses he purportedly described in messages to various women are unsettling at best. "I am 100% a cannibal. F, that's scary to admit. I've never admitted that before. I've cut the heart out of a living animal before and eaten it while still warm. I want to see your brain, your blood, your organs, every part of you. I would definitely bite it, 100%, or try to F it, not sure which, probably both. If I F'd you into a vegetative state, I'd keep you, feed you, watch you, and keep F'ing you till you are so sore and broken, I can't stop thinking of F'ing your actual brain. Brand you, tattoo you, mark you, shave your head and keep your hair with me, cut a piece of your skin off and make you cook it for me. Whose slave-master relationship is the strongest? We'd win. When I tell you to slit your wrist and use the blood for anal, raping you on your floor with a knife against you, everything else seemed boring. You crying and screaming, me standing over you. I felt like a god. I've never felt such power or intensity." "If Army is guilty of anything," his friend insists, "it's having a penchant for super kinky sex." Catherine Gates, a social anthropologist and the author of Deviant Desires, told The Cut in January that there is indeed a cannibal form of sex role play that tends to involve more realistic scenarios, but it's still fantasy. They're not actually eating pieces of people, but you will have one person be the meat and another is the preparer. Victoria Hartman, author of I Love Dead People, Inside the Minds of Death Fetishist, told GQ that most people into cannibalism role play are not interested in actually harming anyone. Because of the confusion and taboos, Army's friend thinks that the actor is being unfairly targeted and embarrassed. One person who has known both Army and Elizabeth for a decade thinks Army's very dry sense of humor and a lack of context around the text messages are to blame. When the rib-eating, toe-cutting screenshots first appeared online, the person said, "I was like, this is just Army making really perverse jokes." And then it got conflated with his seemingly newfound interest in BDSM sex, which is his prerogative. Sexual abuse allegations are especially charged in a post-hashtag MeToo climate. There are a lot of nuances to the subject of sex and consent, and it's just not a topic that people are really patient about these days, the person said. He's a really down-to-earth guy. I think he's just having a moment. After all of this, Army has boomeranged back to the Cayman luxury hotel he was so desperate to flee. Well, my ex, for a very good reason, wife, is refusing to come back to America with my children, he wrote on his private Instagram, so I have to go back to Cayman, which sucks, except there are a few silver linings. Above the caption was a video that showed a woman from behind wearing black lace lingerie and down on all fours on his bed, like effing Miss Cayman again while I'm down there. Army later issued an apology and clarification that the woman in his picture was not the actual Miss Cayman. Another post read, "Divorce is so fun. Not as fun as drugs, but what is?" According to Brettler, Army's primary concern now is seeing his kids. Don't go out after dark. Army may not be the first hammer accused of darkness, but he could be the first to suffer public consequences. His last film, titled Unbelievably Crisis, premiered in the quiet shadow of its star's PR spiral in February. Another film, Death on the Nile, an Agatha Christie adaptation co-starring Gal Gadot, is currently scheduled for a September release. The only statement Army made came in January, when he told the public why he was leaving the Jennifer Lopez rom-com. "I'm not responding to these bullshit claims, but in light of the vicious and spurious online attacks against me, I cannot in good conscience now leave my children for 4 months to shoot a film in the Dominican Republic." Army's lawyer told Vanity Fair he would not be commenting for this story. Those who know Army professionally have had a hard time watching the Army they knew seemingly implode in a fit of social media post, bad behavior, and substance abuse in recent months. Though, how would Army's namesake, Armand, have fared in a social media world? But neither will anyone speak on record to support him. Several people in Army's camp imply that the timing of the allegations, given the divorce proceedings, is suspicious. But a source close to Elizabeth says that she has been blindsided left, right, and center. She was humiliated enough seeing Army photographed with a string of women so shortly after filing for divorce, when their children had not even been aware of the split. The internet is forever, and it kills her that one day her children will see how brazen their father has been, not only with his casual dating and drug use, but with this deeply disturbing allegations. A person once close to the family has expressed genuine concern for Elizabeth as she moves forward in her custody battle with the Hammers. "I want to tell her to be careful," the person said. "I hope she can just get off that island soon." Elizabeth has told friends that while she is fearful herself, she is projecting strength for the kids and trying to find occasional humor in the darkness. She's been joking to friends that the only thing that makes sense to her, looking back on her marriage since the allegations surfaced, is the Netflix movie starring Zac Efron as Ted Bundy. Extremely wicked, shockingly evil, and vile. People are worried about Casey, too. She has been speaking openly about her family's alleged secrets in the wake of the public's newfound interest in the Hammers. Recently, she received a text message from a woman who knows three generations of Hammer men. "Don't go out after dark," the woman texted her. "If you do, go in a group. Park under a light and near a store entrance. Valet as much as you can. Be aware and beware. Always check to make sure you're not being followed. Watch your surroundings for a stranger's face that appears more than once." Right now, Casey has about $100 in her savings account. "If you would have told me in my 20s that I would end up financially challenged, single, and working at Home Depot, I would have bet you $1 million that wouldn't have happened." The inheritance settlement lasted her 18 years, and she's been getting by on her own since then, she said, eating Progresso soup and bologna sandwiches. She joked, sort of, about her own plans. "I'm going to walk into talent agency WME, Casey said, "and I'm going to tell them you got rid of the bad Hammer. Now how about you take the good one?" If her brother Michael had given her even one of the family paintings, she said, she'd be set for life. "I never was taught to save money or to think ahead. I never thought it would end. It's okay, though, because I broke the cycle, if that makes sense, and got away from the Hammer genetic trail." This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both Parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico.